Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gant, alongside Jeremy Espion. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, it's the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. 3070, and listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. Jeremy?
Paul?
How are you?
Phil's victory yesterday. Looks like it should be a good season. And I guess we're at what day? Day 22, right? Day 22.
Day 22. Day 22, and we'll get into the lockout in a moment. We're expected to be joined by WNBA legend Cheryl Swoops, and Cheryl's going to talk about her return to the WNBA with the Tulsa Shock at the age of 40, and Cheryl's going to talk about that. We're also going to be joined by former NFL tight end Ryan Neufeld, who's going to give us his perspective on the NFL lockout. And if you remember, Ryan is also the husband of Dawn Neufeld, who appeared on VH1's Football Wives this past season. And also, free agent cornerback Drayton Florence will stop on by, and Drayton's going to talk about the lockout. And also, he's going to talk about his foundation, as he has a lot of great things going on with his foundation, and he's going to talk about those great things going on with his foundation. And we're going to bring in Charles Swoops in the next few minutes, but I want to talk about, let's start with athletes over 40, and the whole thing has changed now. The whole thing has changed, and before I get to athletes over 40, we're also going to be joined by St. Peter's assistant coach Marlon Gill, who's going to preview the Final Four. Marlon's actually in Houston now, so he's going to give us a preview of the Final Four. But I want to go back to athletes now over the age of 40. And, you know, we will have Charles Swoops coming up, and, you know, she's just turned 40, and she's returning to the WNBA. You got Bernard Hopkins, who's preparing to face John Pascal, and hopefully for him, trying to win a title at the age of 46. I mean, you got Evander Holyfield still going at it. Jamie Moyer, who was 45, 47, 48 years old, still pitching in baseball. I mean, nowadays, we are seeing athletes go way into their 40s. Going deep into their 30s. I forgot about Brett Favre, who also in his 40s did some great things. So we now have athletes who are going into their 40s and accomplishing great things. Science, I don't know if it's science, I don't know what it is, but guys are bigger, stronger, faster, and they're finding a way to hang around a little longer. Maybe it's the technology that's in place that allows guys to recuperate faster, the various weightlifting techniques and training techniques that some of these guys use that help them stay around for a long time. But 40 has now become, I guess in a lot of ways, the new 21. And individuals are sticking around late into their 40s and getting it done into their 40s. Cheryl Swoops, we'll see if she can get it done into her 40s, as, you know, she plans on joining the Tulsa Shock in the WNBA. But can she continue to go deep into her 40s? She's definitely going to try. At the age of 40, will she go deep into her 40s? Only time will tell. But guys now are going into their 40s, and they're playing at all-time levels, and they're getting it done. And it's an amazing thing to see an individual at the age of 40. You figure 36, 37, you're pretty much shot in terms of a player in any of the sports. You figure 35, you're on the downslide. Now 35, you might be still in your prime and still going. Because, like a Bernard Hopkins, who's getting better with time. I wouldn't say better at time, but Bernard Hopkins is still getting it done, and getting it done at a high level.
Well, I mean, Paul, I think that definitely, you know, I think the advancements in sports certainly has translated to there being, you know, a lot of you can go longevity. But to say that now 30 is the new 40, I think let's wait a year or two and see how some of these athletes do in their comeback trails.
Well, I mean, it's more like Bernard Hopkins. He's a guy who many felt beat John Pascal in that last fight that they had. I mean, many felt he won that fight. But at the age of 46, he conceivably could have been the WBC light heavyweight champion. So, I mean, that says a lot. Bernard, you know, Bernard's obviously a different guy in a lot of ways because of the way he has always taken care of his body. And I forgot about Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker at the age of 48. If you look at Herschel Walker's body, that body looks like a 21-year-old's body. I mean, he's ripped up, he's shredded, and he even talked about possibly playing football again. I mean, I doubt if it'll happen, but he talked about it. And the guy is ripped up. He's in big-time shape. I mean, he's 48 years old, and he's not on the other. He's still getting it done. He's still beating guys up.
I'm not disagreeing. I think when you look at this, though, a case-by-case analysis serves you much better to me than just sitting around predominantly and saying, well, you know, everybody is going to do this. Look at some of the sports. I mean, Herschel Walker, too, Paul, remember, injury, really an injury-free career. And he retired, I think, he could have kept playing. You know, Herschel wasn't at the end of his NFL rope, so to speak. He's a guy of somewhat of circumstance. So these are and I think they are rare cases. But if you look at you mentioned Jamie Moyer. I mean, he was injured all last season, Paul.
But if you look at it, you look at the 2008 run. I believe Moyer was about 45, 46 years old during that run, and he was played an integral part in the Phillies winning their World Series back in 2008.
Integral. I mean, I don't know if I say integral. Look, Paul, he was a good player, veteran player, but again, and he plays in a sport where how much physical pounding does even especially a pitcher who's playing one out of every 5-7 days. So
okay, how about Brett Favre?
Well, Favre, again, there's an exception to every rule, Paul. I mean, I'm not saying athletes don't do well in their 40s, but let's look at Favre this year. See, he got injured, and his body, he got injured before the season started. But to me, there's where you can see that line in the sand. You hit that bar, and injuries stay with you much longer when you're older than they do when you're younger.
And I agree. I mean, I agree. So what you're saying is, these are just the few exceptions to the rule.
Yeah, and I also think, Paul, again, you have to look at these athletes, and Cheryl Swoopes is a great example. You mentioned, I mean, she's one of the greatest players to ever play the game, you know, so that she's not a middle-of-the-line player. I mean, these were exceptions to the rule, I think, their whole career. Cheryl Swoopes is a phenomenal athlete. I mean, so, again, I look at that and say, are you that quote unquote far off from recognizing that she's a great athlete?
Well, she is a great athlete, and it's obvious she's a great athlete. It's obvious that all these guys, Herschel Walker, the Bernard Hopkins, the Evander Holyfield, the Jamie Moyer, the Brett Favre, these guys are all amazing athletes. But I think it's going to be a trend, and I expect this trend to continue. Guys are going to play late into their 30s and maybe a little bit into their 40s. And it won't surprise me. I mean, Michael Jordan is still shooting the ball around and shooting around with the Bobcats. And, you know, he's always talked about possibly coming back at the age of 50 or at least wanting the opportunity to come back at the age of 50. I doubt if he will come back at the age of 50 because, again, Michael Jordan, near the end of his heyday, at the age of 40, you can see he wasn't the same player. But he still had the jump shot. He still had that reliable jump shot. And that jump shot is something that never leaves you. But Paul,
shooting around in practice and playing in an 82-game season, the one guy that I will concede, because I really do see, I think that, like you said, I totally agree with you with Bernard Hopkins. Hopkins to me is the was the one guy that you look at and you very clearly say, I mean, he could have and should have won that fight, and who knows what's going to happen in the rematch. So to that end, you know, he's of, I think, him and Favre. Favre, though, as I said, was clearly injured in the off season, and his body to me was not able to make the jump of getting back on the field and playing, you know, at that rate. And I don't think that was, I think it was strictly and only because Brett Favre was in his 40s and period. I think other, you put Favre in his 20s when that happened, it would have never been that way.
We're now being joined by the newest member of the Tulsa Shot, Cheryl Swoop. Cheryl, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Pretty good.
A little tired, but I'm good.
Cheryl, you've accomplished so much in the game of basketball. You played the game at the highest of levels. So I don't doubt anything that you can do. But why the return to the WNBA now?
You know, you're probably asking a question that a lot of people want to know the answer to.
Right.
You know, first of all, I think a lot of people think that I just haven't played in 3 years. You know, the last time they saw me playing the WNBA would have been in 08 with Seattle. But I've actually played overseas the last year. I've played overseas, so it's not like I've completely been out of the game like that.
Right.
You know, I thought about it long and hard and, you know, said, do I want to do this? Do I want to come back and play in the league or, you know, or just either be done with it or just continue to play overseas? And the overseas thing wasn't an option anymore. You know, I just decided I didn't want to do that for lots of reasons. You know, and to be perfectly honest with you, I've kind of looked at my coming back to the WNBA as not so much a second chance, but an opportunity to do some things that I maybe didn't do while I was playing. And I don't mean awards and individual accomplishments and things like that, because I've probably accomplished everything I ever set out to accomplish playing basketball and then some. I'll be perfectly honest with you, when the opportunity presented itself, I kind of just left it alone and prayed about it and said, God, if this is the route you want me to take, if this is where you want me to go, then make it happen. And he made it happen.
And it did happen. And Cheryl, you're 40 right now, and you know the doubters are going to be out there. You got a lot of naysayers. What do you say to the naysayers?
You know what? I can't really be concerned with the naysayers and the doubters and the negative things that people are going to say, because I've had it all my life. You know, even when I was 20, you know, people doubted that I could play for other reasons. I was too skinny, too tall, too short, too this, too that. You know, so all my life I've had doubters and I've had naysayers and I've had people that said you can't do this or because of that. And every time I've had that in my life, you know, I've used it as a motivator, and I found a way to get it done. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I've always been a firm believer that you're only as old as you think you are, as you feel you are. And, you know, yeah, it's no secret because it was just kind of out there. I turned 40 a few days ago. But my body, mentally, physically, I really don't feel like I'm 40. You know, I have a lot of pride in who I am and what I do and what I represent and who I and what I stand for. But there's no way I would put myself in a position to embarrass myself or my family, or you know what, more than that, embarrass my legacy. You know, if I didn't feel like I could still go out there and compete at the highest level and play with the best players in this world, I would never put myself in this position.
And funny, Cheryl, you said that 40 is the new 20. Compare your body now at the age of 40 to your body when you were in your prime.
What I really said was 20 is the new 40. But
I had it back.
No, you know, a lot of people say that. Oh, well, 40 is the new 20. You know, this is what I think, or for me personally, this is how I feel. you know, the my 11 years in the WNBA, thank God I was very fortunate to be able to play the majority of those years without a serious injury, except for my last year with Houston. And in 2000, I tore my ACL, rehabbed my butt off in off season, and, you know, came back that following year and won MVP. My last year with Houston was probably the worst season, the worst year in basketball that I've ever had. You know, when I had problems with my back and I had back surgery.
Right.
And, you know, it took me an entire year to rehab and to get 100% again. But I think because, you know, 97 when I had my son, I think because I really missed 3 years of the WNBA, even though I played those years, you know, it really wasn't a full season. I think I kind of preserved myself a little bit to be able to to play at a later stage, or, you know, at an older age. The way my body feels right now, I honestly feel like I could play until I'm 42, 43 years old. Is that something I want to do? Probably not. Because I said that when this game was no longer fun to me anymore, that's when I knew it was time for me to move on. For me, at this point in my career, it's not about, you know, going out and having to prove anything to other people, you know, because I feel like I've done that. At this point, it's about me having fun again, enjoying the game, and now being able to leave something with some of the younger players that, you know, might not quite understand how to win. Because I feel like I've done that all my life and all my career, and which is what I feel like I bring to Tulsa, you know. And I know a lot of people are saying, oh, well, they were 6 and, you know, whatever last year, and, you know, very young
28.
Team. Okay, 6 and 28. They're a very young team. Why would you go there? You know what? I love being the underdog. I love being able to be in a position where I can not so much change the situation, but I can help. You know, I think there's some talent on this team, and all they really need is a leader. And, you know, I think what Marion Jones brings to the team is that leadership ability and that winning attitude.
Right.
You know, in the track and field world, that's what Marion did. You know, she's a competitor, she's a leader, she's a champion, she's a winner, she's a fighter, and that's what it takes to be able to win championships. You know, and I think what Tulsa lacked last year, obviously they were a new team, but having that veteran leadership. You know, I have no idea what my role will be with this team, but whatever that role is, if I've got to play 5 minutes, it's going to be 5 minutes hard. If it's 25 minutes, it's going to be 25 minutes hard. If it's 40 minutes, it's going to be 40 minutes hard. You know, I just want to be able to contribute in whatever way I can and help the younger players understand what it takes to get to the next level.
And Marion, Charles, you are 40 years old, and you're going to be playing under Nolan Richardson. He is known for that 40 minutes of hell style. Are you ready for that brand of basketball?
You know, I had a talk with Coach Richardson, and you know, and we talked about that, and he brought that up because, you know, he said that's what he's known for, and that's what people say. Oh, well, you know, the style that he plays, 40 minutes of hell, it's going to be run and gun nonstop, and, you know, you really got to be in good shape. First of all, I tried to be in the best of shape I could possibly be in, regardless of who I was playing for. When I played for Coach Chancellor with the Comets, when I played for Coach Agler, when I played on the Olympic team, when I played overseas, you know, because that's just the type of competitor I am, the player I am. I always want to be in the best shape I can possibly be in. You know, do I think it's going to be a little different playing for him? Maybe, because he is a different coach. He's the type of coach that I've never played for before. You know, and I also look at that as a challenge. So I know where I am right now physically, health-wise. I know, you know, how my body feels. I know what I've got to do between now and May 15th. And that there's no doubt that I'll be able to play the style that he wants to play. And I think he understands that, and I think he knows that. Otherwise, you know, he wouldn't have ever signed me to a contract.
And Mary, I'll keep calling you Mary. Cheryl, there are
okay.
a lot of athletes over 40 right now who are being successful and who are playing very, very well. And you were once called the female Jordan, and Michael played into his 40s. Were you inspired by Michael at all to make this comeback to the WNBA?
No, not at all. I didn't even think about that. I really didn't. I didn't think
right.
about that. You know, I've gotten a lot of emails and comments and text messages and messages from a lot of different people who are fans, and from a lot of people have said, way to go, Cheryl. You know, I'm happy for you. Go out there and represent all of us women 40 and up. You know, to be honest with you, I don't make a big deal about, you know, my age compared to the younger players that are playing, but I know that's a story. That's, you know, what people want to talk about, and, you know, other people make it an issue, but I don't even look at it like that. The decision that I made to do it was just the simple fact of, you know, if this is going to be my last year, if this is definitely going to be my last year playing, I would like to be able to leave the league the right way. And, you know, to be able to say thank you to the league, thank you to the fans for all of their support, and, you know, and say my farewell.
And, Cheryl, you won 3 gold medals, 3 WNBA titles. You won an NCAA championship. Out of all your accomplishments to this point, what stands out the most for you?
See, that's an unfair question.
A long
no, it's an unfair question because they're all, no, I mean, you know, they're all special. Obviously, playing in college, the ultimate is to win an NCAA championship. So, you know, that of course means a lot, and that's special. Winning 4 WNBA, the first 4 WNBA championships, you know, I don't know a lot of teams in any sport that can say they've done that. So, you know, that also is special. Representing your country in the Olympics, not only one time or two times, but getting an opportunity to do that 3 times, I mean, how could that not be special? You know, I'll be honest with you and say, of everything I've accomplished in my athletic career, the biggest thing I'm most proud of is being able to have a kid and come back and play that same year and having him around and him being able to share that and enjoy that with me.
And you talked about that. How difficult was it to come back after having a baby and come back and play basketball, WNBA basketball? So we're talking basketball on the highest level.
I didn't say I was in shape when I did it, but I did come back. I was a few pounds still overweight. But I wanted to be a part of the inaugural WNBA season, and, I mean, it was difficult. You know, I don't think a lot of people out there really understand how hard it is to have a kid and, you know, come back and play and be the way you were. And, of course, I wasn't not that year. It took me, you know, that off season to work out and get back in shape and be able to come back and compete at the level that I wanted to compete at. But again, I wouldn't trade it for the world. You know, it was just such a remarkable time for me and a very special time for me. But, you know, it was hard. It took a lot of work, and that's why even now, me coming back to play now, you know, I kind of said if I could come back the same year after having a baby, come back and, you know, get out there and run up and down the court, even though I wasn't in the best of shape, if I could do that, there's no doubt in my mind I can do it now.
And now, Cheryl, you are one of the few openly active gay athletes. It took a lot of courage on your part to come out. And when you came out, you said you wanted to make a difference. Do you feel you made a difference in this area?
You know, I don't know. I think everybody kind of has their issues and you know, their problems and things that they want to do and things they want to be a part of, and, you know, to be able to make a difference in a positive way. I don't know if I did that necessarily, but, you know, it was at the time, it was something that I felt like, you know, needed to be done. And I just really kind of got tired of living in a shell, I guess. But, you know,
right.
I mean, life is good.
And that's a good thing, and we're glad you're coming back, Cheryl. Cheryl, where can we find information about you?
Where can you find information about me? It
depends
on what kind of information you want to find.
All
what kind
right.
of information are you looking for?
All
well,
there
you know,
is the best
I have,
you may have.
No, I have a website. It's
okay.
It's swoops22.com.
Okay, it's
loops23.com. And on the website, yeah, I mean, people can go on. They can leave comments. I blog on it. You know, we're still in the process of just putting more information on it. Eventually, I'm going to have, you know, different types of Floops gear and Floops product on it that people can purchase. But right now, it's more of a site for people to go on and just kind of see what's going on with me. And I welcome any and all comments, good and bad.
Are you going to roll out the Air Swoops this year?
I don't know. I'm trying to decide what I'm going to be playing in this year.
Roll them out, Cheryl.
If I can find a pair in my closet, I'll definitely be rolling them out for sure.
Cheryl, we wish you nothing but the best of luck with your comeback. You're a great athlete. You've been a great basketball player. And, again, we wish you nothing but the best of luck.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. I really appreciate it.
Cheryl,
I'm going to try not to disappoint people too much.
And I don't think you will. And if you do, so be it. Your legacy is fine as far as I'm concerned.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
The great Cheryl Swoops, she will be making her return, everybody. She's returning to the Tulsa shop. Wish her nothing but the best of luck. Cheryl, it was a pleasure.
Thank you. Looking forward.
We're now being joined Cheryl. By the newest member, Cheryl Swoops.
She's back. Congratulations to her at the age of 40. We'll see if she can be successful in the WNBA. Good luck to Cheryl Swoops in her decision to return, and I wish her nothing but the best of luck. You think she'll be successful, Jeremy?
I hate to break the bad news to you, Paul. No. I think, again, like, there's sports where I think you can take off a year or two, and then there are sports I think that you...
Well, you gotta remember she didn't take any time off. She continued to play in Europe.
Paul, I mean, Europe is time off. I mean,
that's not necessarily true to say Europe is time off. I mean, a lot of top players in their off season go to Europe to continue to play. They go overseas to continue to play. And for a long time there, you had a lot of athletes when there wasn't an American women's basketball league. A lot of female athletes went overseas. So I disagree when you say it's a time off, if you will.
Well, I mean, my contention in all of it this is any athlete, not female or male. I think when you're not playing in the real professional league, unless
so
it may have been to an injury, unless it was an injury, so to me, it's the subpar. It's you might as well not be playing.
So you're insisting upon that notion,
yeah,
that Europe is a vacation, if you will.
It's not a vacation, Paul. I'm not saying that. It's not professional. It's amateur. It's like playing. It would be for her. It would be like playing in college.
It's professional basketball.
Huh?
It's professional basketball.
No, it's to me. It's they call it professional basketball, but it's like it's almost amateur. The reason, again, I'm not. Listen, overseas is certainly you know it's. I mean, I'll use I guess the term. It's somewhat prestigious, but I'm looking at the whole and saying, well, I mean, I don't see that part of the entire spectrum. If you're going to play overseas, if it's just as good, then trust me, Paul, there'd be NBA. I mean, there would be NBA teams there now. There would be Major League Baseball teams now. They'd have all these franchises there now, and they don't. So it clearly can't be.
That's
nothing new.
We'll just have to agree to disagree on this particular topic. But, I mean, again, she's back. And, again, from my perspective, I wish her nothing but the best of luck. And I'm sure Jeremy does as well. We'll see if she
picks up. I hope she does great. Yeah, I mean, I hope she does great. But I mean, I'm just keeping it real.
And we appreciate you keeping it real, or like they say in the streets, keeping it 100, if you will. But this past week, Warren Moon came out, and Warren Moon, who has become an advisor to Cam Newton, Auburn quarterback, who will be coming out and who will be probably a top 10, if not top 20, NFL draft pick as a quarterback. Warren Moon came out and he said he thought that the criticism of Cam Newton by the fans and by the media has been unfair. And he pointed to a recent article in Pro Football Weekly where they basically they had said that Cam Newton has a fake smile, comes off as scripted, has a selfish me-first makeup, and always knows where the cameras are and plays hit them. That's strong words, and a fake smile, that's strong words, and I can understand where Warren Moon is coming from with this. I mean, you're basically attacking a man, and maybe it's not race, but maybe it's race, maybe it's not, but you're attacking this man because you're saying allegedly he has a fake smile, that he's scripted, and he's a me-first type of makeup. I mean, what does a me-first type of makeup look like?
There's a lot of interesting, to me, the whole story, there's a lot of interesting bylines, I think, everywhere you go and or look in the entire story. First, the author of the story is actually well noted. I know this was put out, I know ESPN has spoke about it, that a year ago, he called Jimmy Clausen pretty much a pretty white boy. I don't think when you can establish the fact that this is essentially a very flamboyant author, but I do think, you know, if you can see that he's saying a year ago that he calls Clausen a pretty white boy, this year he's, you know, making – there really wasn't racial tones to what he said. Again, it was stupid,
Warren Moon to come out
and make it a racial thing, Paul. The reason I say it was stupid is because he comes out and makes this issue on a guy that has enough to deal with already. And to me, I don't think if I would have been Cam Newton, I wouldn't have wanted this to have to go to be racial. Go ahead.
But how can you tell somebody, how can you write a guy has a fake smile? Okay, comes off as scripted. You can, and again, selfish.
That's not
a
racial, Paul.
But a me first makeup. Where does that come from? A me first makeup. What does that look like? What's a me first makeup look like?
I'm gonna tell you, Paul.
I'm not saying it's racial. But I'm not saying it's not racial either. But, I mean, if you look at it, a lot of times if certain people look a certain way or are described a certain way, I mean, you go back to Allen Iverson. I mean, the guy in the face, you describe him as looking like a thug. But last I checked, thugs don't go to work every day and support their family. So if that looks like a thug, then I really want to know what a thug looks like. If that's a thug, then we have nothing to worry about in our society if Allen Iverson is the poster child for being a thug. So what I'm saying here,
your question is, what does a me first attitude look like? Here's what a me first.
Well, let's start with that. What's a me first makeup?
You used his name, and I love him like a dad. But I'll tell you the truth, a me first makeup is actually Allen Iverson. There's a me first.
What is a me first makeup? What does that look like? I mean, what? Because he shot the ball a lot of times. Let's talk about Allen Iverson because he shot the ball a lot, or because that was his role with that team. In order for that team, if you look at the 2001 Philadelphia 76ers, a team near and dear to my heart, if you look at that team, in order for that team to win, Allen Iverson had to shoot a lot of times. Otherwise, the team would not be successful. Who would you rather have shooting? Eric Snow? Tyrone Hill, Aaron McKee?
Paul, I'm not saying, but I think when you looked at what the author was talking about, he's talking about a me-first attitude off the court. He's talking about all of this was off of the field with regards to Cam Newton. And even if it is on the field, I'll give you both sides of the coin, and again, a comparison to a guy like Allen Iverson. Off the court, Iverson had a me-first attitude. You know,
I don't know what that looks like.
Oh, come on, Paul. You know, because you grew up right outside of Philadelphia. I mean,
I don't know what a lot of makeup is.
It's leaving your car. It's leaving your brand new Mercedes Benz in a parking lot on the way to pick up your mom, and
that's,
just leaving it there.
That's not a me first makeup. That's just you. That's naivete. That's just stupid. But that's not a me first makeup. That's just stupidity. That's just stupidity in my mind.
Okay.
It is day 22 of the lockout, and we need to talk about it. And to talk about it, we're going to bring in former NFL tight end Ryan Neufeld. Ryan, how are you, sir?
I'm pretty good. How are you guys?
Doing well. And now, Ryan, it is day 22 of the lockout. April 6th is the big court date, Tom Brady against the NFL. It gets heard. What do you expect will happen on that day?
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of meetings, you know, up until this point, and not much has happened. So, you know, with it being, you know, early April, I really don't see much happening at this point. And I don't see much happening. You know, really, I believe something will come about probably sometime this summer. But I just think there are too many, you know, unresolved issues that still need to happen.
And let's talk about some of the issues. Some of the issues on the table, one of them is the 18-game schedule. Being a guy like yourself, Ryan, who's played 7 years in the league, how reasonable is an 18-game schedule? Seems unreasonable to me.
I'm sorry, you said you think it's reasonable?
I said it seems unreasonable to me.
Oh, right, yeah. No, I agree it's you know, unreasonable. I mean, they talk about taking two games off the preseason, but, you know, mostly your veteran players that are starters don't play much during those, you know, the first couple games in the preseason anyway. So, you know, just adding two games, you know, just increases the wear and tear, you know, on the players. And, you know, I think in for the NFL wanting to add a couple games, when looking at being vested as a player, to be vested, you need 3 years and three games to become vested. And when you're vested,
right,
then you get, you know, your insurance, your benefits 5 years beyond playing. And so the average lifespan of a player right now is 3.2 years. Okay, so I believe in the owner's minds, when they add a couple games, they reduce that lifespan to 2.9 years. So now in the future, they're getting less vested players that have to pay for their benefits.
Wow. That's a great point.
So, Ryan, that's, you know, I enjoy the economic discussions of this a lot. And I think, I think it's great now that current and former athletes are actually coming out and educating the fan base, you know, on how much of a business, you know, these professional sports really are. Because I think up into many of these strikes, it's a difficult opportunity to find, you know, an outlet that's willing to let either a current or a former player talk about, you know, how much is at stake here for these players. So how important is this from an opportunity from players to show the fans, you know, really the – what happens is X, but the truth is Y.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think you know, hopefully more of that will come out that the public can see. And you know, I think, you know, that with the players, really what we're looking to get is obviously with us putting our you know, bodies on the line and as well as our future quality of life. You know, it's just we want what's right, you know, for the players as far as, you know, the proper health benefits in the future, you know, beyond, you know, after we're done playing. and then also be able to be compensated fairly. And so, you know, that's really what our goal is, you know, for this. And then, you know, with the owners really wanting more, you know, more money on their end, you know, we're fine, but, you know, then show us in your books, you know, why you guys need more money. And then, so that's where the hang up is, you know, the owners don't want to really show us the why they need more money, you know, from throughout the whole deal. And then I think also what the owners don't want to show the players, I think some of that the owners don't want to show each other what they're making. So I think it's between owners and players, also between the owners themselves, when kind of wanting to keep what they make private.
And right now,
go ahead,
Jeremy. No, you're the king. Go right ahead, man. Well, I think one of the things that you hit on, Ryan, was, and I wanted to touch on it before we move back, was the inequities between, like, where the player stance is, especially not just with revenues, but I'll call them, for lack of a better term, royalties, the future earnings. And I think, you know, I've been saying for now, for the last 3 months, if I was a player, I would stick and take a real hard line stance on the future earnings rather than, you know, getting a greater percentage of, you know, the current year's revenues. Because long term, you know, that's where the NFL does seem to make all of its money, is in its long-term licensing. And players, I don't think, have gotten their fair share of, you know, what happens after they retire, and the NFL is still promoting, you know, their image, their likeness. They just got 57% of the current year.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good point. I think, you know, when players are done, you know, they've, you know, contributed to the brand of the NFL. And, you know, I believe that, you know, something also, you know, in the future, could, as far as royalties, could definitely be put into place for former players, for sure. I think, you know, that's something that definitely could be brought up as well.
And right now, Ryan, the NFL is doing great. It's making a lot of money. It's bringing in $9 billion annually. I mean, this is a recession, and the NFL is still very profitable. Right now, the NFL wants the players to essentially take a pay cut. As a former player, Ryan, does that sound fair to you?
No, definitely not. Definitely not, especially if they want to, you know, add a couple games. And, obviously we are the ones on the field and pouring our hearts out, you know, every day in practice and playing, things like that. So, definitely it's not fair for us to take a pay cut, you know, for that.
And right now, Ryan, I mean, the rookie wage scale, which is another big issue right now. I mean, if you look at Sam Bradford, he was a guy, $50 million guaranteed before he even took a snap. In your mind, does something need to be done with that rookie wage scale?
Yes, I do. And I think that's probably one of the areas that, you know, we can agree on and come to an agreement with the owners with, as far as, you know, kind of capping that. I think they could have like a tier, you know, your top, obviously your top draft picks will get, you know, higher bonuses and then so on and so forth down the line. But I believe there has to be a cap on that. You know, I just don't think you can give a player, you know, 50 plus million and not even, you know, step on the field at the NFL level yet. I mean, there are players that, you know, are drafted high that, you know, end up playing well. But obviously, as you know, there are players that are drafted, you know, top five picks that, you know, end up not making it, not panning out. So, you know, I think there definitely has to be a cap at the beginning. And then if they prove that, you know, that they could, you know, withstand the league and that they could perform and, you know, really live up to the potential and the hype, then, you know, they can be compensated for that, you know, just like any other players that are coming through and having to prove themselves.
And, Ryan, when it's all said and done, do you think games will be missed from this lockout?
Do I think what, Will?
Do you think games will be missed?
Oh, when it's all said and done, no, I don't believe so. I mean, if games are missed, you know, maybe some preseason, but I just believe there's just, you know, too much money out there. I don't think the owners, obviously the players don't want games to be missed. I don't think owners want games to be missed. So I believe that something will get done, but it'll be obviously a few months before that happens.
And Ryan, your wife, the lovely Dawn, who came on our show, she was on VH1's Football Wives last season. As her husband, how did you view that whole Football Wives show?
I think the experience was good. Dawn enjoyed it. I think as far as the show and what was aired on TV, I don't agree with it. I think a lot of drama was created, you know, by the show. I think they missed out on a lot, you know, between the women, some really good times and some quality interaction between them. So I think that I thought that was very unfortunate. They were just trying to create drama to get obviously the ratings, things like that. So overall, I probably wouldn't view it as a positive experience.
What was it, a surprise? I think watching the episodes for you, that not, you know, part of the cast, to maybe hear what your wife said they filmed, and then to see kind of what they edited, so to speak.
Yeah, it was. It was surprising. I mean, we were, kind of expecting to see one thing, but I mean, obviously they, can edit it and kind of look like something else. But it's. It was kind of disappointing, as far as what was on TV and how, it's crazy how you can make someone look, through editing there. But I just thought it was unfortunate that, kind of how things transpired throughout the show and then how they kind of came to an end there with that last episode.
We're talking to Ryan Neufeld, former NFL tight end, and Ryan is also the husband of Dawn Neufeld, who appeared on VH1's Football Wives. And Ryan, at this point, we have not heard anything about a season two of Football Wives. Do you think there will be a season two of Football Wives?
At this point, no, I do not think there's going to be a season two. As far as Football Wives, I don't know, they might do I don't know if they'll do another location or whatever, but as far as in Dallas, I don't believe there's going to be a season two.
And, I thought it was a fairly good show, and I'd like to see it back again.
Yeah, it was entertaining. I'll give it that. I mean, it was entertaining.
Definitely,
from what I know and from what happened, as far as the behind the scenes and things that went on, I just think they could have included some of the positive times and what's happened positive between all the girls instead of focusing on creating drama.
Right. We saw what we saw on VH1's Football Wives, but how much different are Football Wives in general than what we saw on that TV show?
As far as what you saw, I mean, like I said, it's from, a lot of that's editing. I mean, really with the background of the women, I mean, you've got a pretty good picture of everyone's, stories and backgrounds and where they came from and what's going on in their lives, injury and financial issues and things like
right.
that. Being cut, whatever, things like that. I mean, that's pretty real across the board. It's a lot different from some of your other sports. Out of the big four sports, the players, football, they're the least paid. Obviously no guaranteed contracts. So 80% of players, three years after retirement, 80% of players are bankrupt, and or divorced, and not every one of those players are going out, pissing away and spending their money like crazy. Life happens to everybody and obviously medical issues, there are medical bills that come up some bad investments, things like that. So there's just a whole, wide range of issues that come up, you know, after retirement, and you know, because of contracts not being guaranteed, you know, it's just the more prevalent in football players that some of that stuff happens.
And Ryan, we hear the argument that this battle, the lockout battle, is a battle of billionaires versus millionaires. Ryan, you never really were a high salary guy throughout your career. So when you hear that, how do you react?
It doesn't sit well with me. I mean, obviously, it's. I would say, you know, most of the players are not millionaires. I mean, yeah, you know, I'm not complaining. You know, we made some good money. I mean, obviously, more than you know, the average person out there. But you know, it's it, definitely, you know, a lot of us were not millionaires. It's just kind of. You know, it's not exactly the truth. So, but yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I feel about it.
And what's next for Ryan Neufeld?
Right now, I'm just hanging out, with my family, trying to figure out Plan B, and so at this point, it's really getting out of bed in the morning and. The aches and pains and all that stuff. So kind of dealing with that, it's kind of increased throughout the last year as far as, some of my different medical issues. So right now it's trying to, deal with that and figure out, the future.
And Ryan, you talked about those aches and pains. How real is that for an NFL athlete? How real is those aches and pains?
They're pretty real. I've obviously, with being a fullback, mainly fullback from tight end, I have the neck issues. I have some, just recently, some nerve damage that really showed itself within the last month or so, creating some partial paralysis in my left arm. So it's kind of really gotten weak and things like that. So with the neck and shoulders, the back, knees, and had some foot issues as well. So it's kind of that stuff, really having to deal with.
And Ryan,
were you taking any pain meds during your playing days that you had to kind of wean off of, once you were out of football?
Yeah, I mean, I took some while I was playing. It got to the point where I'd have to take some to, not just get through the game, but, get through practice. So, and then, once I stopped playing, I was able to, get off, a lot of that. And then 2007 was my last year in the NFL, and now probably in 2010, kind of things have been creeping up again, so having to take a few more things, some things right now that really do help me sleep at night too, because you're not waking up, with pains and aches here and there keeping you up all night, so having to kind of work through that as well.
And Ryan, when you see the story of Dave Dorsett and the story of Andre Waters. As you get a little older, does that make you a little nervous?
Yeah, a little bit. I can't really, dwell on that. All I have to do is kind of focus on the here and now and spending the quality time with my family and my kids at this point, and try to do what I can do preventative to, help things along in the future.
And, Ryan, we wish you nothing but the best of luck, sir, in the future. It was a pleasure talking to you, sir. And, again, nothing but the best of luck, and we'd love to talk to you again.
All right, cool. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Take care.
All right,
Take care. Ryan Neufeld, former NFL tight end, fullback, and the husband of Dawn Neufeld, who appeared on VH1's Football Wise. And, I mean, when you hear his stories and hear some of the injuries that he's dealing with now, it makes you really think and really pause and think about the pounding and the beating that these NFL athletes take week in and week out. And we kind of, I think a lot of us kind of take it for granted, but I mean, deep into their lives, I mean, it's tough for them to even get out of bed for many of them. And Ryan talked about his injuries and what he's struggling with. And he hears stories about Andre Waters, who in his situation, ultimately he committed suicide. And then you had Dave Duerson, who committed suicide. They're at this point trying to determine if that came from some sort of brain injury. So when you hear these stories, it's kind of chilling, and it really makes you think. And it really helps you to understand why these players are trying to get as much as they can. Because tomorrow, again, you got to get as much as you can in that short window. Because the reality of it all is when you retire, you may not be able to handle a 9-to-5 job. So when you retire, you could be pretty much no good to the world in terms of working.
Right. And I think, Paul, you really could not have said it any better than that. And I mean it. There is a, I really do believe, and one of these Ryan even just mentioned was the concept we've talked about, like the millionaires versus billionaires. And Ryan said, you know, we've gone over the numbers enough. I mean, these players are making money. There's really no debating that. But to that end, to say that they are millionaires when I think it was 4 weeks ago, the Wall Street Journal put out an article, the top money manager for a mutual fund did a survey of 4,000 of their clients that were in a net worth between $4 and $1 million, and 72% of those people surveyed believed that the worth that they had, which was at, you know, on average $3 million, was not what they believed to be sustainable. So, I mean, here are people that will be real millionaires are telling you, you know, to be a millionaire is not necessarily, it doesn't bode you anything really outside of just saying to someone you're a millionaire. It doesn't mean you're going to be able to sustain that unless you have something to back it up on. When you're done playing football, unless you've done something during your football days, or you're lucky enough to have endorsement deals, or to do, you know, to have future earnings, most of these players, especially the ones who are leaving college early, which is the overwhelming majority of them, they don't have anything else to do. That's it. Their ability to earn income is over.
And it's kind of a sad tale, but you see it too often than not that the only thing they really can do after they're done college is play football or play basketball or play any other type of sport. And the reality of it is you have to have some kind of backup plan. And that's why, again, I said it earlier and I'll say it again. As an NFL athlete and as an athlete in general, you may only have that short window to get as much as money as possible.
That's
where
you
have that
true one. If you're, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to reiterate. I mean, that's where if you are a player in this league, your goal needs to be day in and day out. You want to get the most amount of money you can get. I mean, and here is a generational, if you will, Paul. And I think we all know generationally. I mean, clearly this is huge for a player. Period. I mean, they clearly right now have the upper hand in trying to get more long-term security ship, even if it's more money in today's contract, because more money today clearly equates to these players for more money tomorrow. And the mindset, again, these owners can open up new businesses. Nothing precludes them from doing that, you know, ever. So there needs to be a recognition that, yeah, I mean, this is, again, it's a business, and the players should recognize this is their business. They should get the most amount of money they can get, period.
And the reality of it is also, yes, baseball guaranteed contracts, basketball guaranteed contracts, hockey guaranteed contracts, football non-guaranteed contracts. So the reality of it is you may see a contract 5 years, $50 million, but they can be cut
after the second year, the first year of that deal, and all that money is essentially dead money. It's useless. It's just money that was put on a piece of paper on the contract, but it's money that they'll never see. So the reality of it is these guys try to get them as much as they can in that short window of time. They want the big-time signing bonuses. They want all the money they can get.
Look at how much money it costs them, these guys, in injuries. And I interrupt because you brought up a valid point to Ryan about with Andre Waters. And, you know, when these guys, when their millions run out, the pension that they get is futile. The health care for them becomes immense. And so if you don't have the money to continue the kind of medical care that you need, you got some long-term problems there. And it's a problem, sure, that the player theoretically may have created based on, that it was them playing the game. But at the same token, I go back to, I think they really do need to, meaning the NFL, recognize this is their responsibility when they talk about player safety. If they're going to talk about player safety, then they really do need to realize player safety should also mean there should be money put away or money allocated for their long-term security, their safety.
Yes, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I totally agree with you. And, I mean, granted, a lot of these players know the risk that they take when they sign the dotted line, when they put their helmet on, and then when they step on the field. They know the risk involved in playing football in the National Football League. They know the risks that are involved there. And I look at this current system, the way it's set up, and we talked about this in the past, but the way this current system is set up, you're better off being an All-American, a college football player, and coming in and making, like a Sam Bradford, $50 million guaranteed, like others who are coming in making big-time money, Jamarcus Russell, $40 million, $40-plus million, and he's stunk to join up, and this is before he even took a snap. So if Jamarcus Russell, who was an All-American at LSU, he did what he had to do at LSU, and that, in a lot of ways, may or could set him up for the rest of his life. The system is backwards here because he did what he had to do on the collegiate level, yes, but he didn't do anything on the NFL level, and he's being paid handsomely. And you have other guys out here who may not have been the highest of draft picks and who are working off rookie contracts and who have surpassed those rookie contracts, like a DeSean Jackson who surpassed his rookie contract with his play. I mean, and the reality of it is if DeSean would have went down last year with a big-time injury, he may not have ever gotten paid. So the system is obviously backwards. Ryan acknowledges that it's backwards. I mean, everybody you talk to acknowledges that the system is backwards and something needs to be done to get that fixed.
Well, I mean, we've heard it enough, Paul. I mean, there's no doubt that there will be in the new labor deal, there will be some remuneration to and for these athletes. These older players will see the pendulum swing, and yeah, again, Stafford was great to see a guy coming out and looks like he's going to earn his money, but
maybe it's just one year.
Well, I mean, you learn a lot. I think. We don't know
if Stafford, Bradford, or whoever will come down with any type of big-time injury. So, yes, we assume that they will earn their money. But the big question is maybe. And you brought up a good point about the health care. I mean, health care is bankrupting, a lot of people. And you talk about the NFL. I mean, for three games, you receive 5 years after you retire of free health care. But what happens after those 5 years?
Well, we know they either go on, if they're lucky enough to get on Social Security, then a lot of these players, if they're broke, and many of them are, go on medical assistance, and it's a managed care system. Even Medicare, in all of its grandeur and its greatness, there's a 20% gap in every dollar that's spent. So I think the public has to remember, even if these players do get to Medicare, which many of them, you have to remember, are retiring in their early 20s, or I'm sorry, in their late 20s, early 30s, getting to Medicare is 30 years out. That's not exactly 30 years doesn't go by like that. So these guys are, you know, if they can't get a job that covers their health care, and mind you, even if it does, even most of these health care, these are players that are looking to have, you know, shoulder surgeries, knee surgeries, then they're missing work. So if they miss work, then they're going to lose their benefits. You know, it can be, these injuries can really be the downfall, if you will, of these players' lives.
And yes, I mean, you make a great point. And then, like I said, if you're first off, you got aches and pains, and then you're waking up and you're in debt because you can't afford your health care. I mean, that's a double whammy. That's enough to depress anybody. I mean, A, you're in pain, you're beat up. B, you can't afford to get the necessary care for the pain and for being beat up. And that's enough to make anybody depressed, blue, upset, all those things. So you can understand why certain individuals, and I'm not saying that's the reason Waters commit suicide or Dorrington commit suicide, but I'm saying is you can understand why some of these former athletes are going through some rough spots and a lot of them losing their money. And, you know, when you lose your money, you're depressed, you're down, alcohol starts to become a factor, drugs start to become a factor.
The depression also, I mean, I think there is I just don't think people appreciate to the reality of figuring out one day you are beloved by millions and the next day you're forgotten. And that Paul is even if you are some no name who's played, you know, even a few downs, because these are guys who, again, predominantly, even if you're an offensive lineman who starts, I mean, they do, it is not the worst lifestyle to lead. And many of them who are leading that lifestyle, they get, if you will, you know, let's use the term, that they have a following. And then you go from being the starting offensive lineman or even a second-tier offensive lineman, but for, you know, half the year you wear that jersey, you're known around town, and you're making $300,000 to $400,000 basically to sit around for, let's say you are a career backup, like a Coy Detmer. But then one day it's over, and if you didn't manage your money, you know, it goes by quickly. If you don't have any skills, because you were a third-round draft pick as a junior and you never, you know, you never really hit the big money contract, that money will last you a couple of years, and where do you go? With no real, you know, what's the term I want to use, fundamental skills to do anything with.
And a lot of times when it's over, it can be over very fast, and before you know it, you're going to have to figure out what's plan B and what's next for your life. And that can always be difficult. I mean, you can even look at it from your own personal, you're looking at it from yourself personally. You're coming out of college, you know, your first time being kind of on your own and kind of trying to find your way. You come out of college, you're going to try to figure out what's next for you. What's plan B, what's your plan for your life and how are you going to do this thing? And you've never done it before. And some of these guys, you know, only thing they've done their whole life is play football. So they come out of retiring from the football and their football career is over. What do they do next? So it's almost like they're 18 again or 22 again, trying to figure out what is next for you. What's that next move? What is next for you? And that is always a very difficult thing. That's always a very difficult thing. Yeah, I mean, was it difficult for you, Jeremy, coming out of college?
Well, I mean, we remember, Paul, I mean, both you and I, we both went to Temple at the same time. I was fortunate. We had, I knew we were going to be in accounting, but talking now, especially to younger college kids, you don't know what you're going to do. Not just that, but think about being an athlete where you had advisors your whole life to advise you on one specific aspect of your life. But then when the playing ends, all your advisors are gone. I mean,
right. And let's bring in another a current player now who can kind of talk about this whole lockout
defensive
situation.
Back, Drayton Florence. Drayton, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How you doing, man?
Not too bad. Right now, Drayton, something, you know, I hate talking about. The lockout is going on. It's been going on for the past few weeks now. Not really a surprise that it happened. But as a player, were you surprised when things happened and you knew there was going to be a lockout?
I wasn't really surprised. You know, we've been planning for this lockout for the last 2 years. But just for it to actually happen and to go through without a deal being done, I wasn't really surprised at all to a lot of the players because we've been preparing for it for 2 years. Now that it's here, hopefully we can get it done with and over with quickly so guys can get into training camp and off-season conditions and get this thing rolling again.
And at this point, Drayton, no games have been missed, none of off-season and conditioning in terms of the OTA training camp. None of that has been missed at this point. Do you envision any scenario where games will be missed because of this lockout?
Say that again, buddy.
Do you envision any scenario where games will be missed because of this lockout?
Well, obviously, I hope not. I'm in the position where I'll be a free agent, so I don't want to miss any games this upcoming season. But, you know, the PA and the guys that are, you know, going into those meetings told us to be ready to miss at least the first 8 games of the season. So, like I said, we've been prepared for the last 2 years, knowing that the CBA was coming to an end. And, you know, the more guys have been informed, the more guys have been prepared, I think it'll be easier to weather this storm until they get the things fixed that they need to get fixed on the, you know, the negotiation side of things.
And how is a guy like yourself, an NFL player who is a free agent at this point, how do you prepare for a lockout?
Well, you got to make smarter decisions as far as savings, you know, putting money away. We only get paid during the season, so it's a little bit harder for us to budget than it is for most people. So, you know, they've given us workshops and sent us out various emails of how to save. You know, most of the older guys have already been on plans as such, but, you know, it's a little bit harder for the younger guys just coming into the league, getting adjusted to things.
Right.
And, you know, we've been trying to help the young guys. You know, the off season's long for us as far as not receiving any money and getting any cash, but the bills continue to keep going. So, you know, we've just been kind of helping out the young guys so they can see how things work. And like I said, we've been prepared for this thing for 2 years, so it's not a surprise to anybody.
And Drayton, I mean, you hear a lot of people saying that, oh, this is just a battle of billionaires versus millionaires. You know, we hear some fans saying we don't really have sympathy for you guys. But the way I see it, Drayton, is this. You guys as NFL players only have a certain window to make a certain amount of money. And the reality of it all, if you could retire 2, 3, 4 years from now, and you may not be able to hold a 9-to-5 job because of your football-related injuries. So when you hear the billionaires versus millionaires, how do you respond to all that?
Well, I think it's hard for somebody to speak on something they really don't know all the facts about, first of all. So, you know, on the outside looking in, yeah, that's what it looks like. You know, we're millionaires arguing and negotiating with billionaires. But at the end of the day, I mean, if you don't take a stand and, you know, stand up for the guys that are coming behind you, you know, what point are we really serving? I mean, it's a great game that we play. And, you know, we just want to keep things in line in the way they should be. You know, the older guys that are retired, needing health benefits and, you know, the health care benefits. You know, we just want to make sure things are in place. So when we retire, you know, those things will be in line for us.
And Drayton, interestingly enough, you called for on Twitter that NFL season ticket holders cancel their season tickets. Tell us why.
Well, I think that, you know, doing things like that would, you know, give the fans who have a lot of leverage in this situation, and I don't really think they know how much leverage they have, give us a little bit of edge as far as how the owner's looking at things and trying to get a deal done. If everybody were to turn in their season tickets and then they would see a big loss of revenue, you know, they might want to get the deal done a little bit faster than than it's been taking them. I mean, they've had 2 years to get the deal done. Let's not forget that. It's not these past few months that we've been negotiating. This thing's been going on for 2 years. So I'm just trying to get the fans to see that kind of leverage that they have. And, you know, there's a power in numbers always. So, you know, that's what we're showing as a PA, a former PA member union, you know, that there's power in numbers. That's why we decided to decertify, let this thing go into the court's hands, and see if we can get a deal done there.
We're talking to Drayton Florence. Drayton is currently a free agent now. He played with the Buffalo Bills in the 2010 season. And speaking of that, Drayton, you had a very good season with Buffalo. You had 3 interceptions, 1 return for a touchdown. And you have been on record saying that you want to return to the Buffalo Bills. When this whole lockout thing is taken care of, do you think that'll happen? Do you think you'll return to Buffalo in 2011?
I think it's a good possibility. You know, I've just been trying to go out and prepare myself for any situation that may come up. Last year was a pretty decent season, personally, but team-wise, you know, we didn't do near as many of the things we wanted to do, and that's always getting into the postseason. But, you know, I'm certainly open to it. Obviously, I don't want to close any windows of opportunity off. But, you know, if I'm able to return to Buffalo, then I'll go out and play as hard as I can for them in the next season.
And speaking of the Bills, if you do return to Buffalo, you guys were 4-12. But one thing I can say about you guys, you really competed. I mean, you played tough games against the Steelers. You had a great opportunity to beat the Steelers, Patriots, Ravens. I mean, you guys played teams very tough. In your mind, if you do resign with the Bills, what do you guys need to do to take that next step?
Well, I think last year, you know, we played in a lot of close games, like you said, and you know, what the good teams do, what you see those playoff teams do is they know how to close those games out. So I think us just getting the experience of being in those tight games with those caliber teams will help us as far as next year. You know, we've already been in this situation. Okay, this is what we need to do. Let's go ahead and get this victory so we can move on to the next week and set ourselves up for postseason play at the end of the season.
And right now, we talked about the lockout right now, and you got to find a way to keep yourself busy. So you tweeted your former coach, San Diego, who was Marty Schottenheimer, and Schottenheimer now is one of the coaches in the UFL of the Virginia Destroyers. You asked Marty Schottenheimer if you can become the defensive back coach. What had happened? What with all that? What was his response?
Well, I thought it was a good opportunity for me to stay around the game. Obviously, congratulating my former coach on getting back into the coaching side of things, you know, up in Virginia. So I thought it'd be a good idea, you know, if I reached out to him and offered him my services to come in and, you know, help coach the defensive backs, be an assistant or, you know, whatever I could do just to get around the game and, you know, share my knowledge with some of those guys. And, you know, I also offered that any compensation that I would receive be paid to my foundation so I could help some more kids out in the Buffalo and Ocala area where I'm from.
Are you going to be a part of that coaching staff at this point?
Well, we'll see. I mean, everything's up in the air right now. So I guess when Coach Marty and myself, you know, talk it over a little bit, we'll see what transpires. But I'll keep you guys posted.
Is the next thing for Drayton Florence when he retires, is coaching an option for you?
I'm sure it would be. I don't know at which level, but, you know, just love being around the game, being able to share the knowledge that I've, you know, acquired over the last few years, playing in the NFL and being around a bunch of great guys. I think I'll be able to help some guys out.
And right now, Drayton, you're very busy in the community, and that's something that should be applauded. A lot of times we hear stories of athletes, and we hear all the negatives, but we don't hear the positives. And you set up the Drayton Florence Foundation. First off, tell us about your foundation.
Well, the foundation has been up and running for the last 6 years. What we do is, you know, provide assistance for at-risk and underprivileged kids in the community as far as holiday programs, Christmas programs, Thanksgiving, turkey drives, youth football camps, and things of that nature to help inspire these kids to reach their potential. Not only through sports, but through academics as well.
And so you're looking with your foundation, again, to help kids and help people in the community, which is a very great thing. You guys have a lot of exciting news from the Drayton Florence Foundation. Tell us about some of the exciting news coming out of the Drayton Florence Foundation.
Well, we started this Playmakers Foundation thing that we're doing right now, where we partnered up with Take Stock in Kids, and it's a program where they provide kids with scholarships that aren't able to afford scholarships to go off to college, but they meet the qualifications, and you know, they've been hit with budget cuts. So for us to help those 29 kids that are in the program, which is actually my football number, we're trying to raise $6,400, and that would be equivalent to a scholarship for a kid. So we're trying to see if we can raise that amount of money to, you know, help one of those deserving kids get to the college level and continue to do what they want to do to better themselves. And, you know, with Twitter and Facebook, you know, we started that about a week ago. We launched that, and it's doing pretty good right now. So I think we'll surpass that. If we don't get one scholarship, we may be able to get two of those going.
Again, we're talking to Drayton Florence, defensive back, free agent defensive back, and he played with the Buffalo Bills in the 2010 season. Now, Drayton, how can people find information about your foundation and your various programs?
Well, they can go on the website, DraytonFlorenceFoundation.org, and everything's there on the website, very user-friendly, and they can keep up with the current events, such as football camps that I'll be hosting this offseason, possible 7-on-7 high school football tournament, and, you know, things that we're doing in the community. They can go on there and check everything out.
And make sure you check it out. Make sure you support this foundation and these various programs. There's a lot of needy kids out there, needy people who need the money to go to these colleges. And a lot of people with potential who just don't have the money to get things done and to go to college. And so this is great. This is a great thing
exactly.
That you're doing.
Yeah, and we're just trying to provide a little bit of assistance to help those kids out.
And Drayton, real quickly now, you talked about being a free agent. How, in terms of training or anything like that, have you started training and started preparing for the 2011 season?
Oh, yeah. You know, this is going to be my ninth year going into this thing. So, yeah, staying in shape is not a problem for me, obviously. You know, we got a lot more downtime now because of the lockout. So I'm sure a lot of the guys are working out, but I've been back at it for about a month and a half now. And, you know, like I said, I'm just going to be prepared, stay in shape, try to keep my mind occupied and you know, just keep continuing doing the right things to be ready for the next upcoming season.
And Drayton, we definitely wish you nothing but the best of luck with this upcoming season, if there is a season, but I think there will be a season. They'll take care of it. But we wish you nothing but the best of luck with that. And, again, we wish you nothing but the best of luck with your foundation because, again, I want to applaud you again because you're doing some great things in the community, and people need to know about that.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Drayton Florence. Pleasure talking to Drayton Florence. And, again, he's doing great things in the community with his foundation. I applaud him for that. And, again, make sure you check out his website. He said .org. But it is actually DraytonFlorence.com. That's DraytonFlorence.com. There you can check out his foundation. There you want to donate to his foundation. And make sure you support this guy. He's doing some great things in the community. And I said that during an interview, and I'll say it again. A lot of times we hear the negatives about these athletes. But we need to focus on some of the positive things that these guys are doing in the community. They're giving back. Drayton Florence is giving back. And that's a big thing. And we need to support that. We need to applaud that. And we need to show these guys in doing the positive things that they do and give Drayton Florence a lot of credit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was your point, Paul, I think, is the most notable to the end that they're absolutely, like you said, this is a 9-year player, as even Drayton was mentioning. Never once, or not once in 9 years, I'm sure, has anyone even recognized the fact that he has these foundations. Has it ever been profiled or highlighted? So, you know, someone could go out there and certainly make mention or make word of the fact that this they have a. An ability to help people.
And it's, like I said, it's great, a great thing, man. And I'm going to support Drayton Fontes Foundation. He will have my $29. And, you know, we look forward to talking to Drayton again down the line. And, again, the foundation, make sure you support it. DraytonFlorenceFoundation.com. Support it. Go there. Go to the website. Donate and support this great charity. And, again, it's Saturday, and it's Final Four Saturday. And big things are going on in Houston. Big things going on in Houston. You got Butler against VCU, and then you have Kentucky against UConn. It's going to be some good basketball there. Cinderella, Butler, Cinderella, VCU, they are there. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in this Cinderella battle, this battle of Cinderella teams. Butler, VCU, and, I mean, it's going to be an interesting contest. No matter what happens, there will be a Cinderella team, if you will, in the NCAA final. There will be a Cinderella team in the NCAA final, no matter what happens. So that should be interesting. And a lot of people, you hear a lot of people talking and saying, well, Butler or VCU, you know, I would rather see the top teams there instead of Butler, instead of VCU. I'd rather see a Kansas in there. I mean, I don't want to see a VCU in there. I want to see a Kansas in there because VCU is not the best team. Kansas is the better team. But that's the beauty of this tournament. It's a one-and-done type of deal. On any given game, anything can happen. If you get out hot from three-point range, you can win a game. If the other team is cold, you can win a game. And so the reality of it is that the best team doesn't necessarily win in the NCAA. It's the hot team. It's the hottest team that wins. And if you look at football now, it's kind of the same way. It's kind of that hot team at the time that usually wins the titles and wins the championships. You got to be hot. And right now Butler's hot. Right now VCU is hot. And so they are Cinderella's, but these teams are getting hot at the right time. And it's going to be an interesting battle tonight as the Final Four kicks off in Houston.
Well, I mean, I told you, Paul, this is, I think, for the NCAA or for college in and of itself, they have hit a coup, I think, with the tournament. Every year, it seems to be memorable in and of that year. I think it's surprising this year, especially with Butler. They're certainly Cinderella, but they also certainly do look to be very for real. I would not go into a game with them, especially now, just assuming that, well, they're just going to collapse, you know, because it's the Final Four and now the pressure really hits. Although they might, but I think they have demonstrated that they are a very solid basketball team, period. And they can beat you on skill, talent, you know, alone.
And I will say this about Butler. At this point, I mean, this is your second appearance in the Final Four. You are not really a Cinderella in my mind. Yes, you're the eighth seed. You're an eighth seeded team, but you're not a Cinderella team. You've been here before. So maybe we need to stop calling Butler a Cinderella team and just start calling them a legitimate team, a team, good team.
I agree. I completely agree. Not to mention, I mean, I think when you look at, that's why I say, when you look at what they did, especially in this tournament, I mean, they made small work of some big name teams. And I look at it and I say, you know, like that's what the point is, that they are certainly not just a very, like a small laissez-faire type team, period. They are for real. You're just going to walk in as a, you know, number one seed and knock them off. It's not going to happen.
Well, if you look at Butler and how they got through the tournament, they had a buzzer-beater victory against Old Dominion. They had that whole situation with Pitt. A number one seed is Pitt, and that whole game, and, you know, the foul fest and all the things that went on near the end of that game. And then they had an overtime victory against Florida. So, I mean, the way they have gotten here hasn't been the prettiest and hasn't been the easiest. You almost think I mean, it was like the Packers in a lot of ways and how they made it through the NFL playoffs and through to the Super Bowl. You might have to start thinking maybe this team, the Butler Bulldogs, they may be like Kelly. They may be like Beyonce. They may be like Michelle. They may be Destiny's Child here.
And Paul, it was such a good show.
This is probably
our greatest show, and it was ruined. You just ruined it. Congratulations.
The way they have gone through this tournament, it has been very, very impressive. You can't discount what they have done in this tournament. And the way they have won, it makes you believe and makes you think. This could be the Butler Bulldogs. They could be Destiny's Child.
Paul.
So, I mean, give them. Butler has gotten to the tournament in a way that they didn't expect.
The bottom line is,
no one expected Butler to be in this position, and they're in this position. And the way they've gotten here has been. It's been great, the things that they have had to do to get to this spot. But they could be Destiny's Child.
Destiny could
be on their side. I'm just saying.
Also, let's look at a few more, important things. And one of them, I think, that's, important to recognize, and I mean this, is, like you said, I'm not going to use that just disgusting term, but for them to be considered a Cinderella was last year. This year, and the way in which, to me, they did this year shows they're certainly not that they're not that new, if you will, to playing this way, playing hard-nosed. This is their type of basketball, and to me, they just excel at it.
And you look at Butler and the team that they're playing, they're going to be put there. They're led by Matt Howard, who's done his thing in the tournament for the Butler Bulldogs. And like I said, he was the guy that hit a big-time buzzer beater for the Bulldogs against Old Dominion. So he's been doing their thing for Butler. And Butler has just – they are not a Cinderella team, but they're going up against another Cinderella team, and that is VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University. And this is a team that has done it with the three ball. This team has hit 44% of their threes in this tournament. 44%. That's very good. That's from downtown. And they shot 895 threes in this season. So they shoot the three ball a lot. So in a lot of ways, you could say they live and die, by the three-point ball. And so, and they're also getting it done defensively. They're also getting it done defensively. I mean, they're holding teams to under 40% shooting, and also from, they're stopping the teams from shooting their three ball, and they're holding teams to 23% from downtown. So they're doing some good things, being Butler, the Virginia Commonwealth team. And, it's hard for me to think that a team that lost to Drexel in the regular season would be in the Final Four to begin with, but it's even harder for me to believe that this team could actually win a game in the Final Four and ultimately win the whole thing. But they are here. And again, if they continue to shoot the three ball the way they are shooting the three ball, this team may win this whole thing. 44% from downtown. If you shoot that way throughout this tournament and in this Final Four games tonight, you may be going to the finals, and ultimately you may win this whole thing. And especially if you continue to defend the way they are defending. I mean, this team is defending.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, that's the... I think if you're going to look at this logically, they're going to win it on defense. I mean, that's what they come in and they certainly pride themselves on their ability to do. If they get it done, they're unmatched. Period. Their ability to defend you will probably result in a loss. But they're also, and we also need to recognize, they're not exactly going up against, little sisters of the poor. So being able to defend is going to be important, but let's look at their opponents, and let's remember, Paul,
this is a, you know, this is the, and it is the Final Four, and getting there even twice in a row doesn't make you, it certainly can now make your program look differently, and when I say differently, I mean, you know, as a more prestigious program, but by the same token, twice is not, it doesn't guarantee you anything. Getting there more than twice is where, you know, where you're going to be able to go in and, in the second half, I shouldn't say fourth quarter, but they need some time to develop as a team, and I think we all should certainly recognize that. But that being said, Paul, I mean, I will say this, because I think that's what you're about to ask. I'm going to tell you right now, I can see them pulling an upset. So do I see them doing it? Who do I see winning? Well, I guess I'd like to be conservative and say that they're going to fight and be valiant, but they will not come up victorious.
So you like Butler tonight in that first game?
No, I think they're actually going to – I'll say this. I've been saying it all week. I'm going to call this a choking situation. I actually think they're going to come out very flat and only because so much has now been made of them. I think it may have actually kind of gone to their head.
So you're saying who's going to win tonight? Butler, VCU?
I think VCU will come. You know, they will come. Oh, I like their style. I actually like this matchup for them. Because if they can get out and run, which I think they're going to, and do it very early, they can move fly away from this game.
And I'll say this, if VCU continues with this formula, 44% from downtown, holding teams under 44% shooting in these games, if they continue with that trend, then I think VCU will go to the championship game. Again, they live and die by the three-point shot. So if the three-point shot is on, watch out. And I think they can beat any team in this Final Four if that free ball is going for them. But I like Butler in this game. I'm going with the whole Destiny's Child thing. I think Destiny is on their side. And I just, the way they've gotten to this point has been impressive. And they've gotten by the skin of their teeth. And I think they will continue to get by the skin of their teeth as they will win this big matchup tonight against VCU in advance to the title game. Also, you got Kentucky against UConn, and UConn, it's all about Kemba Walker right now, who has been getting it done for the UConn Huskies. I mean, his team has won 9 games in the last 19 days, and they've been getting it done with Kemba Walker, who's been just playing out of his mind of late. I mean, the guy is getting it done, and he had the big 36-point performance against San Diego State, and then he comes back with 12 assists the other night. I mean, 12 assists against Bucknell in this tournament. I mean, so he's done it all different types of ways. He's beaten you with his assist game. He's beaten you with his scoring. I mean, 36 points against San Diego State. The guy has done big things. He's been clutch, as you saw in that Big East tournament. He's just finding a way to get it done for the UConn Huskies, and he's not letting them lose. He may not let this team lose another game. And also, give a lot of credit to Jeremy Lamb. The freshman has been playing out of his mind right now. I mean, he's 11 for 15 from downtown, and he's just getting it done for the UConn Huskies. UConn is playing great. Kentucky's playing great. It's a battle of two big-time programs, and it's going to be a big-time basketball game. And we will be joined shortly by St. Peter's assistant coach Marlon Gill, who will break this Final Four down as well. So make sure you stay tuned for that one. But I like UConn and Kemba Walker. Granted, Kentucky has been playing well. They have been getting it done. Brandon Knight, the clutch freshman, hitting big-time shots against Ohio State and Princeton throughout this tournament. He's been getting it done for Kentucky, but at the end of the day, with Kemba Walker doing what Kemba Walker has been doing, with Jeremy Lamb, and with Jim Calhoun, one of the greatest coaches
in college football right now, college basketball right now, I like the UConn Huskies.
Well, I think they're going to – actually, they're going to win it all. And one of the reasons they're going to win it all is strictly because of Kimball Walker. And don't get me wrong. I mean, Jeremy Lamb is going to be phenomenal in that program. And he has been phenomenal
if he stays.
In the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, they are – you can see they're far and away. They're the leader. For a very theoretically inexperienced team, they certainly – have made some, or not some, they have shown they're the team to beat in this entire tournament. And I think that, to me, at this point, it's too late in the quote-unquote in the game to assume that they're just going to come out and not realize what's at stake, especially with like you said, with a coach like Calhoun. And also the fact that this is a team that's very well, I think, very well coached. They know what is at stake. They when you have a coach like that, it's going to be very rare that you're not going to be able to come out and realize, you know, what has to be done.
And let's bring in, we're going to bring in St. Peter's assistant coach Marlon Gill, but he's had some technical difficulties. He's going to call back. But Marlon Gill definitely
you.
Probably recognize what?
I said he probably recognized, Paul, that talking to you doesn't really do much for him. He had to deal with you long enough, and maybe he's got the better of him, and he's done now.
But we're going to talk to Marlon Gill very shortly now, and he's going to help preview this Final Four, big Final Four. Marlon is actually in Houston now, living it up, I guess. And enjoying the Final Four, you know, we'll definitely should be interesting to get his take on what may happen here in Houston coming up tonight. I mean, the Final Four is a big event. The NCAA tournament is a big event. And they got two big teams in Kentucky and UConn there, and that's going to be the nightcap, and that's going to be a good one. That is going to be a good one. Well, who's going to get it done in terms of guards? Is it going to be Brandon Knight? Is it going to be Kimball Walker? Does Jeremy Lamb continue with his hot shooting? I mean, what happens tonight in Houston? Does VCU continue with their hot shooting from downtown? Or does Destiny's Child, Butler, continue on this role and continue to do what they've been doing these past 2 years? Let's bring in now St. Peter's assistant coach, Marlon Gill. Marlon, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, Paul. How's everything, man?
Everything is great. Everything is great. And now, Marlon, let's start with the first game, the Junior Commonwealth. This is a battle of Cinderella. 18 of Butler, 11-seed of VCU. No one expected to see this. Marlon, being that you're a coach at a mid-major school, does this make you proud to see two teams like VCU and Butler in the Final Four?
It feels good to see these two teams play each other, man, because it gives, you know, schools like a St. Peter's, you know, a chance, you know, to see that, hey, we can do it as well, you know, and just following their mold, you know, following the mold of a VCU, of a Butler. So, you know, I'm definitely happy to see both of those teams in, the teams that nobody expected to be there in the first place. And like I said, it just gives schools like us a chance to say, all right, we can do it.
Marlon, is this a factor of the NCAA's movement for, like, a freshman to be one and done? Or the fact that now if you have a very good recruiting class, you know, some players or some teams are not as deep as they used to be?
Definitely. I definitely think you're starting to see that now. And you know what? You can attribute it to good coaching. You know, Brad Stevens is a guy that has studied the game, you know, came off the hard way, and, you know, you're seeing his reward, and Shaka Smart the same way, you know, just being at Clemson, being at Florida, it just proves that these guys have, you know, put the time in to, you know, do their best when they got their chance. You know, in addition to that, you know, with the new rules that the NCAA has put together, you know, it's making guys stay 4 years. rather than just going straight from high school to the NBA.
And Mark, I want to look at Virginia Commonwealth now. This is the team shot 895 threes this year. So essentially, you could say they live and die by the three ball. If Virginia Commonwealth continues to shoot the three ball the way they're shooting it, 44% in this tournament, could they conceivably be the national champion?
You know what? I think they can. You know, it won't be an easy task, but, you know, you have somebody like a Joey Rodriguez, who I think is shooting like 43% from three, if I'm not mistaken. And they got a couple other guys that can definitely shoot the ball. And I think what helps them, man, is to have a big guy like Jamie Skene on the inside, who's just so big and just so powerful that, you know, it doesn't allow defenses to, you know, to help, you know. So it allows Jamie Skene to do his thing in the paint. And if he is, I would think he can kick it out to guys that can shoot the ball pretty well.
And speaking of Jamie Skene, he had four threes in that game against Kentucky. So you talk about his size and everything. He did it from outside against, not Kentucky, against Kansas. He did it outside against Kansas. So.
Oh, yeah, you know, he's a matchup problem, man. You know, the way he's played this whole tournament has really been the way he's played his whole career. You know, he wasn't really looked at, you know, because he played at Wake Forest and they had a couple of down years. But he can definitely play. You know, most of the year he played inside, and I think, you know, playing against Kansas, playing against the Morris Twins, you know, he kind of took them out of their game. You know, they aren't used to guarding guys that play like they do, you know, can put the ball on the floor a little bit, shoot it. And, you know, he just created a matchup problem for them.
And Marlon Butler, the team that VCU is playing tonight, they're making their second trip to the Final Four. Is it time for us to stop calling this team a Cinderella team?
I think so. I think they have a great coach in Brad Stevens, a good good player in Matt Howard, a good lockdown guy in, you know, Ronald Norad. And Shelvin Mack will play at the next level someday, you know. So they have the pieces in place to do what they need to do to, you know, make this a successful run.
And Marlon, right now, Butler, they've gotten here in some strange ways. I mean, you had the whole situation with the Pitt game. You had the buzzer beater against Old Dominion. You had them beating Florida in overtime. I said it before, and I'll say it again. Is this team like Beyonce, like Kelly, like Michelle? Is this team Destiny's Child?
you know what? I'm not sure. I think once you get to the tournament, yeah, you have some lucky bounces and things of that nature. But I think if you just persevere, like they have through the first couple rounds, anything is possible. And you just want to give yourself a chance, and I think that's what they're doing.
And now, Marlon, you look at Butler. They've been a very experienced team, and right now they're making their second trip to the Final Four. Will experience play a role tonight for the Butler Bulldogs?
I think so. You know, I think if you have a senior-laden team, that definitely helps you out a ton. Guys that have been through the wars and understand what it takes to get the job done. I kind of, you know, compare that to the team we had this year. To have five seniors, you know, it definitely helps, you know, just for when you're going through adversity. Guys that can settle things down. And as a coach, that's something that you want. In timeouts, guys that can step up and say, okay, hey, let's just band together and do what we need to do. And it makes the coach's job a lot easier.
So who advances tonight, Marlon Butler or VCU?
My heart would say VCU, but I'm going to have to go with Butler.
And so you see Butler getting it done tonight, Matt Howard and the Butler Bulldogs.
Yeah, I just think that they've been there already and know what it takes. So I got to go with the experience.
Wow.
And now, Marlon, the Nightcap, UConn against Kentucky. And right now, Marlon, there has not been any player hotter than Kemba Walker. He's carried UConn through the Big East tournament and on to the Final Four. How good has Kemba Walker been in this tournament?
Kemba Walker has been great. They might want to change this year's NCAA tournament to Kimba's tournament. it's been a joy to watch.
And it's been great seeing this guy get it done. I mean, nine victories in 19 days, amazing.
It is, man. And he's just a leader, man. You know, and it's good to see because I've watched him, you know, from afar since he was in high school to now, and to see what he has become has just been great.
And now, Marlon, if you look at it right now, we talk about Kemba Walker, we talk about all the great things he has done, but many forget about Jeremy Lamb, the freshman, 11 for 15 from three-point land in this tournament. How good has Jeremy Lamb been?
I think Jeremy Lamb is the ultimate Robin for this season. Knows his role, and you wish you had 15 Jeremy Lambs just from a character standpoint. You know, right. Never gets too high, never gets too low. Just plays the game, lets things come to him. And you know, if things don't go his way, you know, unlike a lot of guys that we see in the college game sometimes, you know, he doesn't pout or anything, just keeps playing. And that's kind of what you want and what you look for.
We're talking to Marlon Gill, St. Peter's assistant coach. And Marlon, you're at the Final Four, and you're enjoying the good times there of the Final Four. Jeremy, go ahead.
Yes, I am. I'm definitely enjoying it, and hopefully, you know, I can be a part of this as a coach someday.
What's it like to go down there, you know, as a coach and to see that, and you were just saying, that's interesting. Is the talk that the commentators tell you about how this is such a big experience, is it really that big?
Oh, yeah. No, you know, I haven't had a chance to be at a Super Bowl yet, but out here there's no experience like it, man. Just with everything that the NCAA has going on, you know, their convention centers, their coaches meetings, you know, it's just a big event, a good thing to attend. You know, it's good to see guys that you come up with in the business. You know, good time to meet up and talk about the season and everything like that.
And Marlon, back to the game for a second now. I mean, you have Kentucky, many are calling this the most talented team in the Final Four, but they're a young team. I mean, their top three scorers, Knight, Jones,
Lambert,
all freshmen.
Will you be in practice
tonight?
You know what? I would say yes, but, you know, there's a certain guy on that other team with the number 15 and the last name Walker who's kind of not letting, you know, anything down this year. So I love those three guys, you know, and Terrence Jones, Deron Lamb, and Brandon Knight. But I just think what they're facing on the other side is a different beast that the NCAA hasn't seen in a while in Kemba Walker.
So, Marlon, we talked about UConn, 9 victories in 19 days. Kentucky, they're playing well, too. At this point, Marlon, you have Butler in the championship. Who will join Butler in the championship, according to you, tonight?
I'm gonna have to go with the Huskies. I mean, aside from Kemba Walker, I think the key figure for the game tonight would be Alex Oriaki. If he can control the inside, you know, I just see him overpowering Kentucky's big guys. You know, Kemba Walker will be Kemba Walker, and Jeremy Lamb will be Jeremy Lamb tonight. I think that's why UConn will come out on top.
So you got UConn, you have Butler in the title game. Who wins it all?
I'm going to have to go with UConn. Like I said, Kemba Walker is just a different beast that the NCAA hasn't seen in a while. And, you know, it's kind of like the storm that's been brewing. He's just been on a tear from November to now, and I don't think anything is going to stop him right now.
Marlon, you are in Houston. You seem to be having a good time. rubbing elbows with the top coaches in the nation, the top players in the nation. Have you gotten a chance to see any practices?
Nah, you know what? I haven't, man. To be honest, I'm practiced out for right now. You know, now is just the time to sit down with guys and, you know, talk about different philosophies and things like that. And, you know, you bring it back to your own practice, you know, and now you have your spring workouts as well. So, you know, that's kind of what I've been doing. But everybody's different. You know, some guys like to attend those things. I'll attend a few here and there, but for the most part, man, you just want to, you know, pick other guys' brains and, you know, just sit down and have a good time.
And Marlon, it sounds like you're having a good time. It was a pleasure talking to you. Good luck to you tonight, wherever you do. You're going to be at the game?
No, I won't. I'll be watching maybe from my hotel room. Get something to eat and just watch from my hotel room.
So you're going to be banging out a few wings and enjoying the game in your hotel room. But Marlon, it was a pleasure talking to you. Good luck with the upcoming season. St. Peter's basketball is doing well. They made it to the tournament. Let's take that next step next year.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, man.
Take care.
All right.
Marlon Gill, St. Peter's assistant coach. And Marlon is at the Final Four, enjoying it very well. And he seems to be having a good time in Houston. He's having a very good time in Houston, and wish Marlon nothing but the best of luck with his duties as the assistant coach at St. Peter's College. And Marlon has the UConn Huskies and Kimball Walker doing their thing and making it all the way to the finals and ultimately winning this whole thing. We've got another 4 minutes left in the show. Got a new segment in the show. And the segment is called You Stupid.
Oh.
And our first person to be called is for me to tell that you're stupid is the king himself, LeBron James. Tuesday night, LeBron James and his Miami Heat faced the Cleveland Cavaliers in Cleveland. Introductions came, and they announced various players. And then they announced LeBron James, and LeBron was nowhere to be seen. Where was LeBron? Where was he? Where was LeBron? And it came out in the post-game interviews that LeBron was in the bathroom, using the bathroom during introductions. If you believe that, I have some land in the West Indies to sell you. It was very obvious that LeBron James did not want to come out and hear the boos that would rain down on him when he was introduced. My thing is, LeBron James, if you're man enough to go on national TV and tell the world that you're leaving Cleveland, you should be man enough. And you took your medicine the first time around, but you should be man enough to take your medicine again. LeBron, you were in the bathroom doing God knows what. LeBron, you stupid. What do you think about that, Jeremy?
Well, you know, I'm out there thinking that if you're on a documentary talking about a guy in Grant Hill who's still playing in the NBA at a pretty high level, and you sit there and you call him an Uncle Tom, and you have pretty much put yourself out there for everyone to see, and then you get pulled over because you don't know that you really shouldn't drink and drive. I don't know, Paul. To me, you're kind of stupid.
So you're essentially nominating Jalen Rose for You Stupid for this week.
Yeah, I mean, at least for a week, I'll tell you that. I mean, listen, everybody needs a drink here and there. But I don't think you do that the week after you make yourself a public spectacle.
So, okay. And you're right.
I definitely agree with you
but
on that
by
one.
By the same token, I don't think, you know, you when you got to take your booze, Paul, you got to take your booze.
And you got to be
especially
a little smart about
paid.
hire somebody. Do something. But the Youth Stupid Award goes to LeBron James and goes to Jalen Rose. LeBron James, Jalen Rose, you're stupid. We want to thank Charles Blue for stopping by. We also want to thank Ryan Neufeld, former NFL player, for stopping by. Also, Trayton Florence, free agent quarterback. Make sure you check out his foundation, TraytonFlorence.com. We also want to thank St. Peter's coach, assistant coach Marlon Gill for stopping by and previewing the Final Four. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGann. For Jeremy Yespe, this is Paul Gann. See you later.